First thing I want to do is encourage you to come back tonight at 6 o'clock because we're going to look at the consequences of sin. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve are told by God what the consequences of their sins were, both upon themselves and upon later generations. It is really a critical lesson in understanding why Jesus had to come into the world. So I very much encourage you to come back and hear tonight's lesson. Second thing, I encourage you to be a part of next Saturday morning's work. If we really want to have a congregation here 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, then it's going to take work. It won't happen by accident. If we want the church to grow, it won't happen by accident. So please do everything in your power to help. And again, remember to tell me if you can come, to give, you know, names, specific names and addresses and so forth. That's also very important. And number three, next Sunday morning, Lord willing, I hope to start a series of lessons from the book of James that I think will be extremely helpful for all of us, especially for me. Most of the sermons I preach to myself, but I'm glad you're here to hear them too. But so next Sunday, and we will go through that book. Basically, sermons will be what are called expository sermons from basically each paragraph in James. And we will start in James 1:1. So I hope that you can be here for a part of that as well. This morning, we're going to do our last lesson from Hebrews chapter 11 about two individuals, a father and a son, that played such an integral role in God's plan of redemption, that plan that went through the Israelite nation. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21, we read this. Hebrews 11, verse 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. We're looking at faith. We've looked at the faith of a number of patriarchs, a number of people in the Old Testament, how they lived out their faith, what they did by faith. I'm hoping that it has been encouraging to at least some of you to read about these great Old Testament characters. It says that it was by faith that Jacob did this. Jacob was an old man. He was in bed, if you remember the story, and we'll go back and read part of it in a moment. Jacob had been promised by God, the same as Abraham and Isaac had been promised, that it was going to be through his seed that all the nations of the world would be blessed, that his seed would inherit the promised land, that through his seed the Messiah would come. Now, he didn't see any of that. He didn't see any of it at all. Matter of fact, he left that area and ended up going to Egypt. And so he was not getting closer to the promise. He was getting further away from the promise. But he had tremendous faith. And his faith, even on his dying bed, caused him to worship God. And that worship, of course, was based on faith. It was based on trust. Let's go back now and read Genesis chapter 48. And we'll begin in verse 1. Genesis chapter 48. I know this story, this account will be very familiar to you. Genesis chapter 48, beginning in verse 1. Genesis 48, beginning in verse 1. This is what the Word says. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, indeed, your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Ephraim, or Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, look, your son Joseph is coming to you. And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. So again, he's dying. He is an old man at this time. He knows his time is about up. He's on his bed, but he's told that his son Joseph is coming. So he gets his strength together. He gathers himself up and sits up on the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me. Okay, this is a recounting of the blessings. Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Your offspring, whom you beget after them, shall be yours. They will be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. Before we go on, remember about Jacob's sons and who they would become. Of course, we're familiar with Joseph. But remember that those 12 tribes, those 12 sons, Joseph wasn't one of those 12 tribes. It was his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, that were given inheritances in the promised land. But that's a long ways down the road. Years and years later, before that would be fulfilled. Jacob is about to leave this world, but he trusts God to the extent that he remembers and knows the promise that through him, through his descendants, they would have an everlasting possession. He was given the same promises that Abraham was given. He was given the same promises that Isaac was given. And he was so confident, he was so trusting, that by faith, he blesses these two grandsons. Let's skip down now to verse 12. So Joseph brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. Then Israel, and note carefully what happens. Then Israel, who is Jacob, the other name that he was called, stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger. We've seen this type of thing before, haven't we? And his left hand on Manasseh's head, who was the older, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. Jacob knew exactly what he was doing. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. These two would become part of those 12 tribes. We know about Jacob's or Israel's other sons, but Joseph's two sons here, Jacob's grandsons, are blessed by Jacob himself. Jacob had so much faith, so much trust, so much belief that he knew God's promises would come forth. He knew, he trusted. It wasn't some blind faith. It was real hope. And what a tremendous lesson that is for us. I mean, a tremendous lesson. He had lived a long life on earth. Jacob had lived many, many years, and he was dying. But he still believed in the promise of the land. He still believed in the promised seed. He still believed that the Messiah would come through his descendants. And what did he do when he was dying? He worshiped. He worshiped. That's what he did. He was weak. He was sick. He was frail. But he still did what? He worshiped. I mean, this was a beautiful moment in the Old Testament. I know there's not a lot written about it, but I mean, this was a really beautiful moment. We see this old man who can barely move, who can barely get out of bed, who's so frail and weak that he can barely move, yet he finds the energy. He finds the energy to get up, to collect himself, bow down, and worship. You know, some of us may use all kinds of excuses for not worshiping, but it certainly wasn't Jacob's style. He didn't feel like worshiping. He didn't have a lot of energy and vigor and vitality, but he didn't let any of those things, his age or his health, his conditions, he didn't let any of those things keep him from worshiping, from doing what was right. And think about the lesson he teaches us about that. That's a tremendous lesson. It's so easy to let things in our world keep us from worshiping, but not Jacob. He didn't let anything keep him from worshiping. And shouldn't that be our attitude? And shouldn't that be one lesson we learn from Jacob's life, especially at the end of his life? He didn't let little things, he really didn't let anything keep him from doing what he needed to do, from worshiping. And again, it's just, to me, it's a tremendous, tremendous lesson. He believed and he acted upon his belief. In Acts chapter 27, we have kind of a similar statement by Paul. Acts chapter 27, verse 25. This, of course, is during the stage when Paul is on the ship and the ship that's going to be wrecked. Notice what Paul says. Or this is actually what is told Paul. This is what an angel of God told Paul. Verse 25 of Acts 27. Therefore take heart, men. After the angel talked to him, after the angel told him these things, Paul had such a belief that he said this, "For I believe God that it will be just as it was told me." Just as it was told me. He believed exactly what God told him would happen, would happen. He was told that there would be no loss of life. He said, "I believe that." He says, "An angel of God has told me that, and I believe it, and I think we should act upon it." That's what Jacob did. Jacob had been told these promises, and Jacob is acting upon it. And even though he didn't feel like it, even though he didn't have the health, the strength, or anything else, he still acted upon God's promises and worshiped God. He gives a tremendous lesson for us. You know, what kind of faith do we have? Do we have a faith like Jacob that even though we don't have the strength, we don't have the energy, the vitality to do what we need to do, do we still put forth our best effort? That's exactly what Jacob did. He put forth his best effort. He didn't let things of the world get in the way of doing what was right. And that is said to have been done by faith. We turn now to his son Joseph. Most of the young people in here could tell us all the things that happened to Joseph. Now, if there was ever a person that we might say had a right to lose their faith, it was Joseph. From the time he was a young man, all kinds of things were thrown at him by Satan. What happened when he was a young man? His brothers turned on him. Was it his fault? No. He hadn't done a single thing wrong. But his brothers turned on him. Why? Because his father showed favoritism. It wasn't his fault. So what do his brothers do? They sell him off into slavery. You may have wanted to do that to a brother before. Sell him off into slavery. Well, his brothers did it. They sold him off into slavery. And so he ended up going to Egypt as a slave. What happened while he was a slave? Well, remember the account? His master's wife tried to seduce him. And of course, he said no. Well, doing the right thing cost him, didn't it? Because he got thrown in prison for doing the right thing. So now he's in prison. And in prison, what does he do? He continues to do the right thing. He helps people who are in prison with him. And then what happens? They turn on him. So here's a guy who keeps trusting in God. He knows the promises of God, believes in God, believes that God will fulfill his promises. And all of these things just keep thrown at him. One thing after another, after another, after another. And he keeps on believing. How many of us would have given up on God at that point? Said, God, I've had enough. I'm not going to do it anymore. You're obviously not caring for me. You're obviously not protecting me. You're not watching out for me. So I'm giving up on you, God. I'm not doing it anymore. And how many people do we know personally who have basically said that? Because difficulties have arisen, because things have happened to them, that they've given up on God. Joseph didn't give up on God. And what a lesson we learn about not giving up. Joseph knew about the promises. He knew about the promises given to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. He knew about those promises, about the promised land, about the seed, about the great nation. He knew all of those things. And now, Satan keeps throwing one thing after another after him. And all of these terrible things have happened to him. He's been a slave. He's been in prison. He's been falsely accused. But he doesn't give up. He doesn't give up. And what a lesson that is. In Genesis chapter 50, we're told something about Joseph that is wonderful. We see the real type of attitude that we need to have. If you want to know what kind of attitude to have when life throws you difficulties and trials and temptations, read with me these words. Genesis chapter 50, beginning in verse 15. Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil which we did to him." Remember, they were the ones that started all of this happening. So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now, please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive.'" He says, what you did was evil. You sinned against me. But, he said, God used that to bring about something very good. See, that was Joseph's attitude toward all the terrible things that had happened to him. And if you've lived long enough, you've had terrible things happen to you. And so Joseph is saying and showing the right type of attitude about those things. Joseph looked back at his life and being sold into slavery and being put in prison because he did what was right and people turning their back on him and people lying about him. And he said, all of that was evil, but all of that evil brought about good. Because he said, if those things hadn't happened, then the good that was done today wouldn't have been done. And that was Joseph's attitude. And why did he have that attitude? Because he trusted in God. It was by faith he did that. It was by faith. He trusted in God. He trusted that God would do the right thing at the right time. So even though he saw all of those awful things and experienced all of those awful things, he still trusted God. And that's exactly the type of faith that you and I need. He was so trusting in God that, remember, he made basically a command. He said, "Don't leave my bones in Egypt. Take them back to the land of promise." He'd never seen the land of promise. He knew God had promised that his descendants would be, or Abraham's descendants would be in the land of promise, but he had never seen it, so what does he do? He says, "You take my bones to the land of promise." 200 years later, Moses does that. 200 years later. That's the kind of faith that Joseph had. Time to him wasn't what was important. What was important was trusting in an all-knowing, all-powerful God. That's exactly what you and I need to do. In Galatians chapter 3, we have some words that are, I think, very appropriate. Galatians chapter 3, verses 15 and 16, and this will serve as our invitation this morning. Galatians chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. Think about all of these descendants from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and all of these individuals, and God's plan of redemption that went through that line all the way to the Messiah. God had promised Abraham and his descendants that it would be through them that the promised seed would come, the Messiah. Now notice Galatians 3, verse 15. "Brethren, I speak in the manner of men. Though it is only a man's covenant, yet if it's confirmed, no one annuls or adds to it. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He does not say, 'And to seeds as of many,' but as of one, 'And to your seed,' who is Christ." All of those things that happened, all of those events led up to one thing, and that was the coming of Christ. That's what it was all about. All of those events, God's providential working through all of those things, the things we've read about in Genesis, all of those things that's happened, they were necessary for the coming of the Messiah nearly 2,000 years ago. He is the Anointed One. He's that sacrificial lamb. He's the one that shed His blood on the cross. That's the one whom we serve, and that's the one to whom we owe everything, because He shed His blood for us. This morning, David will lead us in a song. We encourage you to not just sing the song, but think about the words of the song and what they're saying. And if you have a desire to come, we encourage you to do that as David leads us in this song. Let us stand, please.